My name's Ken Friedman. I'm from WFMU, and I am not an engineer, but I'm joined here by Patrick Ward and Christopher Maxwell, who know much more of the engineering details about digital and in-band on-channel, the specific proposal for digital audio broadcasting on FM. And I was also hoping during this session that we could talk about the FCC's current actions in general towards spectrum and their movement towards changing the broadcasting field over from analog broadcasting, which is what we've known to, which is what we've come to know and love, to digital broadcasting. Because it looks like now the FCC is moving pretty fast towards digital television, and they're going to start moving very fast towards digital FM and AM. And then perhaps the FCC might even be opening up new bands for digital broadcasting. Do you want to talk about
where you're coming from? Yeah, my name is Patrick Ward. I had never really heard of IBOC till Chris Maxwell, who's been working on this for about 4 years before I ever got involved, explained it to me. And at first I was shocked and said, no, you got it wrong, that can't be right. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized what it is turning into is a spectrum grab that's going to take available spectrum away from potential community radio stations and cause an additional interference problems that'll make new low-power FM stations pretty much impossible to continue in business with any reasonable signal. There's a lot of people have been claiming that these two types of signals, the digital and the analog signals, can continue to coexist. But the master plan of Ubiquiti Corporation, who developed this process, is to basically take over the analog portion and replace it with a digital signal and eventually turn off all the analog carriers altogether.
Chris is handing out some information about IBOC, officially called in-band on channel, and Chris has retitled it, It's Better on Cassette. As some background, what I think I'm a lot better at is perhaps explaining it in layman's terms. Right now, the way FM broadcasting works is where FM stations are broadcasting an analog signal. The FCC has long been interested in replacing analog broadcasting with digital broadcasting, and for the last 10 or 12 years or so, there have been discussions and experiments both in the U.S. and in other countries about the best way to do that. The FCC was entertaining all sorts of various proposals on how we should go about implementing a digital broadcast spectrum in the United States. And in the end, where we stand now is the comment period has come and gone. There's various parties and corporations who are proposing different digital broadcasting schemes. There is really one left, a company known as Ubiquiti, which is owned by the Clear Channels of the world and the equipment manufacturers of the world. And the FCC is about probably this fall going to approve the idea of in-band on-channel as it's been proposed by the Ubiquiti Corporation. That doesn't mean that the FCC is going to suddenly roll out DAB right away or make it mandatory. However, they could do that in coming years. Just yesterday, the FCC announced that digital television, that television sets are all going to have to be equipped for digital signals by 2007. And in fact, the first digital TV sets will start coming out on the market in 2004. The long and the short of it with regard to the FCC is that for 10 or 12 years or more, they've been entertaining digital broadcasting. They are now getting behind digital television in a very big way. And this fall, they are going to announce probably the approval of in-band on channel, which is going to make it possible for stations to elect to broadcast digitally using the IBOC configuration. It's possible that as early as next year, stations may elect to start putting out digital signals. Now, the real issue, the reason why a lot of people in community and public radio are concerned about this is because in-band on channel amounts to putting a digital signal and an analog signal together on the same radio station. And there's all sorts of potential for interference from the digital signal to the analog signal, from the analog signal to the digital signal, and also not only within one station, but between between other stations on the band. Currently, FM stations can interfere with each other if they're on the same frequency, which is known as them being co-channels, or if they're one dial spot away, which is known as first adjacent, or two dial spots away, which is known as second adjacent. So the FCC already knows about interference and has, but unfortunately the FCC has been granting tons and tons of waivers, so that actually interference has just been getting steadily worse and worse. And it's a large problem for community radio stations, because the way the FCC licenses community stations, those stations in general that are between 88 and 92 FM, they use a different method for assigning those licenses than they do for the commercial licenses. And they allow a lot more space between commercial licensees than they do for non-commercial licensees. So we have a situation where already non-commercial FMs are subject to greater interference than commercial stations. And now with the advent of IBOC, we're entering totally unknown territory. Because the idea is that when we come through this transitional period, and what we may be entering now is a transitional period where we're transitioning from current analog broadcasting to digital broadcasting. What I am most concerned about is the transitional period. The FCC, in my opinion, should have found a brand new spectrum for digital broadcasting altogether. They were talked into not doing that to protect the monopoly of the current clear channels of the world. So it was really just an economic corporate decision to do it this way. It protects the monopoly of the current station licenses. So instead of finding a new spectrum to do digital broadcasting on, which would be fantastic, they're electing to transition the FM and AM bands to digital broadcasting. And in the course of doing that, they are undoubtedly going to be creating interference. And in fact, during this transitional period, I think we can probably expect that FM stations, especially non-commercial FM stations, and especially non-commercial FM stations in populated areas where the FM band is more populated, are going to be subject to a lot more interference. Now, on the upside, remember that the FCC, although this fall they're going to probably announce the acceptance of IBOC as the standard for digital broadcasting, that doesn't mean that they're going to make it mandatory. There's going to be this long period in the coming years when the corporations are going to be trying to introduce these digital tuners to people. Remember, what we're talking about here is that every radio tuner out there is going to become obsolete. Every stereo receiver with a tuner, every Walkman, every car radio, anything that has an FM tuner in it, they're going to attempt to make it obsolete. That's because Ubiquiti is owned by the equipment manufacturers. So they see an opportunity to sell a lot more receivers. There will be a period of time when theoretically they will both work, when the analog signal and the digital signal will both work. So it's not like the second they roll this out, your tuners are going to become unacceptable. It's just that they're going to have this new item that they'll be marketing on a consumer level, the digital audio broadcasting tuner, which they will be trying to sell for its improved reception of radio stations. So there's going to be this period of time when the companies are going to be trying to roll this out, and it remains to be seen whether consumers accept it or not. Consumers may or may not go for it. Same thing with digital TV, which they're getting ready to roll out in a big way. It's not a done deal because consumers just may not accept it, and it may not fly. But if it does fly, community radio stations are at danger of having their signals impaired, even worse than they've currently been impaired. I know my station, because we're in the New York area, we suffer terrible interference, and the FCC continues to license new broadcasters, religious broadcasters, translators, boosters, all over the place, so that over the last 15 years, my station's coverage area has been whittled down to half of what it used to be, and it continues to get whittled down more and more. So stations that operate between 88 to 92 FM could especially be affected by this if, for example, there's a large NPR station that decides to turn on a digital transmitter. That could cause interference to a community station if the station that's putting out the digital signal is one or two dial spots away from you. So if your station's at 91.1 and there's an NPR station at 90.7, and the 90.7 station decides to turn on a digital transmitter, it could conceivably cause interference to you and your listeners. Right. Right. Another awful aspect of IBOC is that the FCC is essentially granting a monopoly to Ubiquiti, insofar as that when stations elect to turn on a digital transmitter to install it, at great expense to them, by the way. Chris can probably talk more about the cost of the digital transmitters, but if a station does elect to turn on a digital transmitter, they actually have to pay a royalty to Ubiquiti, which is really pretty incredible. If you think about your current transmitter, you don't pay a royalty to anybody for turning on your transmitter. Under digital broadcasting, every radio station in America will have to pay a royalty to Ubiquiti for simply turning on its transmitter. At the FCC level, another interesting little detail is that for digital television, more and more television stations, it would appear, are electing to not put out a digital signal, but instead they're going to use the digital spectrum to put out additional streams of programming. And the FCC has indicated that that's perfectly okay with them for digital television. They do not appear to be granting that ability for digital FM as a nod, once again, to Ubiquiti and to the current station owners that own Ubiquiti. It is not going to be possible for current FM stations to use the additional bandwidth for a second stream of programming. It's supposedly going to be impossible to do that. I will. Right, digital TV stations are able to take the digital bandwidth and turn it into a whole bunch of different programming streams. And I'll pass it over to Christopher now.
I have this photocopy that I handed out. These are two separate pages from two separate submissions to the FCC's comments from various Ubiquiti partners and Ubiquiti. And the reference is down at the bottom, handwritten. What this shows is, on this side, it shows you a little kind of graphic of what they're planning for the transition. The analog in the center is in the triangle shape, and then the two sets of IBOC carriers on either side. Right? Oh, you don't have one of these? Here, take that one and get another one out. So now if you flip that over, before you flip it over, Here's what they call hybrid stage. That's what if Ubiquiti gets their way and they make a decision in September, as in next month, saying Ubiquiti's wonderful, best thing since sliced bread, gung ho, let's go, then this is what you're going to start seeing in the first major markets they're going to want to introduce it in, like Miami, New York City, I think Los Angeles. I forget. There's five of them. I forget the other three, but it's definitely New York and Miami to be two of the first markets they want to do this in. Okay. of course, I remember Miami and New York because I live over there and I grew up in South Florida. And you remember San Francisco because... so after unknown number of years yet to be defined, or whether it's forced to or not is yet to be undefined by the FCC, they want to transition from this hybrid state to a pure digital state, which you see on the right-hand side. Now, look at that piece here. And flip over and imagine that this graphic takes that and dissects it. This is what the distribution of the information is proposed by Ubiquiti to be. And you'll notice I underlined right here, they call it the secondary protected region. If you look up here, protected is the original core 200 kilohertz. And they call it protected for a good reason, because it's protected right now. The stuff up and down dial from there, the sidebands, are not protected. Those are first adjacent channels. All right? Now, they are stating right here in print, in the official record, that they intend to, now I'm reading a little bit between the lines when I'm about to finish this sentence, they intend to hardware define, set into stone and granite, that you must put your audio into the unprotected outer portions and put all that wonderful, nice, subscription, non-public, non-mass media data streaming in the what they call the protected region. This, to me, says in huge words that they intend to convert the FM dial essentially into wireless broadband, and they really don't care about mass media uses. Because if they did, they would say, okay, this can be defined by software. I can program a computer to say where my audio is going to be on this spectrum. And I could, for example, I'm a classical music, and I also want to have some folk, and I want to have some Korean. All right, I'm going to put my classical music in the center. I'm going to put my Korean over here and my Spanish over there. And because I have somebody who's short space to me, let's say on the lower side, we both voluntarily cut that section off. I just don't even transmit here. My neighbor 30 miles over there doesn't transmit her upper sideband. Voila, we don't interfere with each other. We get more range. But this is not what they're proposing. They're proposing to say by hardware, you must be 430 kilohertz wide. You must put your audio in the most easily destroyed and disrupted outer portions. You must put your data in the center. You must prioritize all your resources and your transmitter to your non-public, non-mass media functions. And surely it's technically possible to have five audio channels. It's technically possible to turn the whole thing into data. But they want to hardware define it to be this way. And so what we've argued is, A, they should move to a separate band, just as he said. But, B, if for some reason we can't get that, and I'll get into that in a minute, if we can't get that, can we at least have a software-defined system that, like with modems, like with my real audio player, like with my MP3 player, all I do is I just stick a disc in the machine, or maybe it comes down through the aerial, I can instantly tell it, oh, we're using a different codec today. We have a better codec for this classical music that's better for classical than it is for talk. And we do classical, so we're going to run this codec. And we want more power for more distance, and we only want one audio channel. So we're cutting off the upper and lower sidebands and concentrating all our power on just one 100 kilohertz wide cluster of digital because we don't want to interfere with our neighbors. We get more range. See, with software-defined transmitters and receivers, I can do that on the fly in any instant. And this would allow digital without all the damaging interference potential. But, I mean, when you look at their own paperwork, they have no explicit. They imply that they could do that, but there's no explicit provision for NPR's request for multiple audio streams. And, you know, this to me says what their real intentions are. I'm sorry. Sure.
Yeah, let me try to put it into layman's terms. FM stations, say your station is at 88.3. You don't just have a point on the FM dial that's 88.3. The FCC actually allots you a portion, actually 200 kilohertz wide, a block of the FM band. So even though we say 88.3, which suggests that it's a single point on the dial, you actually have a range. It's 200 kilohertz on either side of 88.3. Right, 100 on either side. So just think about it like a hair under 88.3 to a hair over 88.3. Let's think about it that way. So you actually have a point, and it's been known for quite a long time. And you occupy the center of that point. If your station is stereo, you also put your stereo signal on the outer edges of that point. And then there's buffer zone between everything. So, in fact, most of the FM dial is currently provisioned is empty space. And what they're finding is that under digital broadcasting, they can put in a ton more signals to it. And that is what they're trying to get to. They're trying to get to a point where the FM band will be auctioned off to the highest bidder for not just broadcasting services, for paging, for telephone services, for video, for interactive, for whatever the highest bidder is willing to pay for it. That is the FCC's vision, both to possibly do that on the FM band, the AM band, and future bands and other bands that are already getting underway. They, so far, a couple of months ago, the FCC put out a request for comments on the Spectrum Trust? What the heck is it called? The Spectrum Policy Task Force. The FCC put out a request for comments for this thing called the Spectrum Policy Task Force. And if you read it, it reflects the FCC's current thinking about what it might do with the AM and FM bands and what it might do with future bands. And what it is clearly thinking about doing is simply auctioning it all off and letting not even necessarily having reserved uses for different bands. Like right now, the FM band is reserved for broadcasters. You don't have telephone companies and television companies and internet companies all using the FM band. In the future, that's exactly what the FCC appears to, that's what they want to see happen. They're looking to transitioning, they are getting underway. Next year it's going to get underway, the beginning of the transition away from the current analog system towards a digital system. And the way that the current FCC, which is Republican dominated, is thinking about it is very, very scary, because they're talking, they haven't even yet mentioned any kind of set aside for non-commercial or public radio stations. So far in this request for comments that they put out for the Spectrum Policy Task Force, there is no mention whatsoever about any kind of set aside for non-commercial radio stations on any new band that they might develop. So let's say they develop some new ultra wideband frequency for digital broadcasting for the future. They're not talking about reserving anything for non-commercial use, for any kind of public, not-for-profit, educational use whatsoever. The only thing that they're talking about reserving space for is public safety, the police and fire department, and so on and so forth. With regard to AM and FM, yeah, they are talking about transferring the frequency and leaving what they call the incumbent licensees, the current people who have radio stations, leaving those people with licenses. What Chris has said is that they're going to create a technical structure that those existing licensees are going to get massive amounts of interference, both during the transitional phase from analog to digital and then once it's entirely digital.
I have a sound sample that I wanted to make sure to give you, so you could hear what the radio dial would sound like if everybody went to the hybrid IBOC, because what they're testing in this sound sample is hybrid IBOC, not the pure. And in this sound sample, you're saying, how does the technology work? The sound sample will actually help explain that. Let me back up half a thought. Do you know how a modem works? Okay, let me see if this makes sense. A modem is like a piano player doing Morse code. Each key is dee, 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 it's on or off, right? It's either making a tone or it's quiet. So imagine that each key is a different channel for Morse code that I can send Morse code down. And I've got 64 channels, right, 64 keys, that I can be sending simultaneously Morse code down. That's a modem. Now take that exact same concept of oscillators, which is to say the when I strike the key on the piano, the string vibrates. That's a mechanical oscillator. Make it an electronic oscillator at the same note of C. Now take that same concept and slide it many octaves up into the RF, AM, or FM region of the electromagnetic spectrum, and it's essentially, I'm simplifying, but it's essentially exactly the same idea. It's just a modem at RF frequencies. So what you have are these piano keys, short spaced against each other, either on or off. And when you hear that on a normal analog radio, it sounds like a buzzsaw, because that's exactly what it is. It's a burst of energy that's on, or a lack of that burst of energy. And so what I'm going to play for you in a second is I went up to D.C. They had a station they were testing IBOC sidebands on called WJFK 106.7, just to the south of D.C. And a fair amount, 40 miles to their north in Baltimore, is WWMX, right? So here's WJFK 106.7, 40 miles over here, 106.5. Somewhat short space, not heavily. Not so atypical, actually. And what I did was I drove my car up there, and I went around the beltway, and I drove around, and I mapped out where I could hear him and where I couldn't. So while the IBOC carriers were on this guy, I had to go all the way up to the beltway, all the way around the beltway, and begin my journey back on I-95, and just as I crossed the Maryland border, I picked him up. So that gives him a 25-mile range, and which you can see mapped out on this long sheet here. That gives you a graphical representation of what I found. When I found out they had turned the sidebands off, I went back with the exact same car and the exact same receiver and did the same thing, and found that I now could hear them 58 miles away all the way down in Woodbridge reliably, and I could catch them on the peaks of the hills for probably a good 5-7 miles further south. So I say reliably a 58-mile range without interference by these piano notes, IBAC sideband, and with them on, WWMX's range drops to 25 miles. Millions of listeners in D.C. who normally could fairly reliably hear him, gone, forget it, buried under what I'm about to play for you. So, in this sound sample, I start my radio. It's an analog FM radio, so I can do a gradual scan. I don't have to step. So what you're hearing is, first I'm going a little fast, and then I slow down so you can really hear it. I'm going to start at 107.3, go through the upper sideband IBAC, then you'll hear WJFK, it's talk, right? So I'm starting off with some, I think it's Lionel Richie or something. And then it's going to be the talk station, WJFK, then you'll hear the lower IBAC sideband, and then you'll hear some contemporary music. I think it's either 105.7 or 9, I'm forgetting which, but it's the next station down below 106.5, the next major local to them station, and then back up again. So here we go.
Hey, you're among friends.
Go ahead. Make your groove thing.
Now, wait a minute. Just wait 1 minute. Mix 107.3.
Retro Saturday night.
And compatible with about 45
games. Okay.
Out of boy there, Marcus. Bring him out.
Now I'm down at 105.7. Back up.
But it's just to
WJFK.
What cares is that Windows 2000 shipped last week.
Continue.
With much fanfare.
Blue.
I suppose. I didn't pay attention to any of
them. I'm back to 107.2. So what you heard in between that sound is going to be above and below every station on the dial. And if your favorite station, if that's you, you're over here playing the only station that's got Pacifica, the only station that's got folk. And here's this big honker down here, the fifth country radio station playing Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks on the buzzsaw is just going to blow you away. You'll notice we didn't hear 106.5 in that sample at all. It's there. It's buried underneath the bandsaw. When it turns off, what you would then hear on my radio is this guy, a little bit of hiss and some garble that you normally would hear in a busy market, JFK. Then immediately you would hear it would jump to WWMX because they're first adjacents. So on a low-end car radio, pretty much immediately you would get the next station. But I found the radio had no problem locking them in because, and this is a really important point that nobody's talking about, but they will when they get IBAC. Because I can do that even on a crappy car radio because there's something called the capture effect on FM. Do you all know what I mean by capture effect? Okay, capture effect is, here's a station at 106.5 up in Baltimore, and way down here in Richmond is another 106.5. You think, oh my God, that's a disaster. No, it's not, because they're 140 miles apart. So I'm driving south, and I'm hearing this guy. I get down to about Woodbridge. He drops out. I get garble, and all of a sudden it locks into the 106.5 from Richmond. Now, technically, my receiver actually gets both signals, but this one's weak enough, and this one's strong enough that all of a sudden my radio jumps and locks into, captures the stronger one. FM has that capability. It's one of the great things about FM versus AM. You turn on your AM radio at night, it doesn't lock into the stronger one. It hears both of them. Right? Gibberish. Well, guess what? IBAC is on or off. That's amplitude modulated, which means there's no capture effect for my IBAC receiver to tell which set of bands to decode. That's why you get, we are predicting, we have not been able to test because they've never run two IBAC stations first adjacent for this test. They've never tried this. So we don't know for sure what'll happen, but based on experience that we've had here and with AM receivers, and we know that IBAC is an amplitude modulated technology. It is on or off. It modulates by its amplitude, right? We know that we will get zones where my IBAC receiver just doesn't know what to do with the signal. But the upper and lower sidebands will be wiping out my analog receiver as well, which means I get neither station in either mode, digital or analog. And in this projected case, all of Williamsburg would lose two stations. And so IBAC is not just a disaster for your analog listeners, it's also going to be a disaster, if we're correct, for your digital listeners. And as far as I can tell, the only advantage to digital, and this is a good advantage, by the way, I'm actually not anti-digital, I'm anti-digital on the analog bands. The great thing about digital is I could, if I wanted to design it, to be instantly dynamically reconfigurable so I can have five audio or one audio and a big data channel, or maybe even I can send primitive video. That's possible with digital broadcasting if I design it that way. But as you saw with their own paperwork, that is not what they're planning. They're not planning for you to choose how to configure your signal. And so, unfortunately, the only one potential good point of digital is completely wasted by their plan. And then it destroys the other analog stations, and if we're correct again, it will destroy a lot of coverage for your digital listeners as well. So, I mean, that's it in a nutshell. I did create some PSAs. If anybody wants to hear them, I can either play them now or later, depending on what you guys think. But since the FCC has finished their comment period on pretty much all of it, and the big broadcasters, Ubiquiti, Clear Channel, et cetera, are pushing hard for a September decision, I think at this point the only thing anybody can do is to play PSAs, talk to the listeners, get people to call their Congress critters, the president, and say, listen, you know, maybe we're not against this. Maybe it's a great thing. But we've never had a chance to be in on the testing. I never got a test IBAC receiver to try out in my car to see what I thought. I never had two IBAC stations right next to each other on the dial to see what happens. We were never told when there were never big ads in the newspaper saying, alert, we're going to test IBAC in your market, and these stations are going to be on and off at the following times, and tell us what you think. Turn your radio on. What do you think? Is it great? Is it terrible? This never happened. And so essentially, they're asking us to just put our faith in a system where the fox is guarding the hen house. The Ubiquiti is running the tests on their own hardware and telling the FCC it's the best thing since sliced bread. And we're supposed to just trust that. And, I mean, look, we got Enron, so you know, let's see where that leads us. So I'm not saying digital is the worst thing on the planet, period. I'm saying the way it's implemented, the lack of proper testing, the lack of inclusion of the public in it, the lack of alert to people when the tests are done and asking people for feedback. And now, to me, finally, the worst of all, now that we have the possibility of software-defined radio, which we didn't have when they started IBAC back in 92, or even 97, we're on the cusp of an amazing new possible way to approach the use of spectrum. It would be stupid to lock us into what potentially could be a hardware-defined technology that would wipe out broadcasting as we know it and would accelerate people's abandonment of AM and FM to satellite tape CDs. I mean, I know this sounds overly dramatic to some, but if we get IBAC, and if this is correct, if this is actually what's going to happen, I have no reason to bother with broadcasting anymore, listening or trying to be in it, because there'll be nothing left except for a few rare exceptions. Some of the big Pacifica stations will survive, but the little 300 waters, you know.
On that uplifting note, you have a question? Yeah, I mean, let's hope that you're correct and that it's really going to be awful and consumers will not go for it.
The big problem is that consumers, it doesn't matter if they go for it, because if they force the broadcasters to activate the equipment, it's going to wipe out my ability to listen to you on my plain old analog radio. So it won't matter if I go for it or not. Oh, Patrick Lester.
I think, you got a question?
Well, it's kind of a question about tactics here. Like, in terms of your congressman isn't the one that directly makes the decision. It's the FCC that's going to make the decision.
But they're not elected.
But the point is that the FCC gets flooded with calls, and the congressman gets flooded with calls. That's going to cause a problem for them. Now, the FCC might try to stonewall it, but the thing is, they won't like it, because they'll know that there's a problem, and this is a political appointee.
Yes.
And so I think that, you know, we need to go for the power source, And the power source, I think, is the FCC. Okay. And the secondary power is the congressperson that knows that it's a problem. And, you know, I mean, it does sound like, you know, there is this, I tend to agree with you that it looks like this is a way to transition to satellite radio. And that
not satellite.
Or digital.
Terrestrial digital.
Well, digital satellite radio.
Well, no, there's terrestrial digital, radio is a different digital thing. And satellite digital can use the same technology, but one comes from orbit and the other one's...
Well, like Cirrus, the ones that are essentially cable radio, only it's delivered via satellite.
That's right.
Subscription-based.
Yes.
And so, I mean, it is a really important fight, and I think that the community broadcasters are going to figure this out pretty soon, and I think that... As this is implemented, there's going to be some time for protest, but it does make a difference that there is the segregation on the dial, because community broadcasters are going to be pissed at other communities. Okay, if I'm a listener to WFMU, and they're, which is close on the dial to WHRC in New York, they're the ones that are going to be interfering with each other, and so... It's not WABC that's going to be the direct interference. So that kind of makes it...
Depends on where you are. If you're out here and you're trying to hear WABC, he's the interferer. If conversely, you're towards New York and you want to hear him, then...
No, but WABC is nowhere near WFMU on the spectrum.
They're
never going to interfere. They're never going to interfere. So it's going to become somewhat muddled. I think that our real audience right now is to get... to public radio,
public radio, unfortunately, is gung-ho for it as long as they can get multiple audio streams.
That's a little overstated.
Oh, well, I'm that end of the spectrum, so you can expect a little bit of an audio stream.
I'd like to make a comment about...
Wait, Carol, do you want to say? Go ahead, and then I'll say something about what's been happening, because I was just going to...
About the history of FM, you know, ever since Armstrong was running around with his mobile recording van, the whole objective of creating this new high-quality radio format called FM was to allow, for the first time, the concert hall realism to be brought right into the living room to the listener. That's the real thing that's been done with this proposal. They're sabotaging the quality to restrict the bandwidth. It's the exact opposite of what the original intent of the founders of the FM radio system was, to have a broad band that had sufficient bandwidth to carry the information content without distortion, without noise. And, you know, I've been an audio engineer all my life, and every time I set up and mic'd a 52-piece orchestra, the whole concept was to get that sound off that stage, out through the wire, out over the air, and with that realism. What they're absolutely trying to do here is to squish it down to the narrowest possible replica of what used to be quality, call it near CD quality, which says we're striving to get close to a almost 30-year-old standard. That's not the objective of the founders of this radio system. The idea was to have the quality there. They're stealing the quality, replacing it with a very restricted bandwidth, inferior version of it, and using the extra bandwidth they therefore create to do mercenary things, to sell services that have nothing to do with public over-the-air radio. These are additional moneymakers. So what happens is the value of the listener from the standpoint of the broadcaster becomes worthless. They don't care what you hear or how the quality is. They're making their money another way. If nobody listens, too bad, we made our money on the ancillary services. That's the real disaster here. One last thing I'd like to mention, too, is that they're using an obsolete codec that isn't even up to modern standards as a good codec for lousy-sounding, you know, MP3 kind of signals. It's an old, ancient codec. In all the testing, they said, well, we're going to have a better codec later, but they never said what that was going to be. So here we have this process leapfrogging way ahead of the proposal, the technology. There's never been an opportunity for a fair comment period by anyone in the public. And the last point is they're forcing everybody who's bought a high-quality FM stereo, even a Walkman, whatever they have in their AM, you know, and FM radios, they're saying, throw this all in the trash can. Your investment doesn't mean a thing to us. You've got to buy it all new. That's like a half a billion or more, you know, investments on the part of the public. And people don't understand they're going to be asked to give that up, just like they're going to be asked to throw out their digital, their old analog TV and get a digital one. No choice in the matter.
Well, I've been serving on both. There's a what's called a DTAC committee that NPR has pulled together of people throughout public radio to look at this issue, and then CPB has convened a panel to advise it in terms of the digital money that's been appropriated, which to this point's been $45 million for the television and the radio transition. I mean, I think the thing that's really driving IBOC, which is not the not what public radio would have liked and what public radio pushed for all along, was they wanted some new spectrum so that we could provide more services, so that there would be more things available. And the commercial broadcasters basically did not want new competition, did not want to have, well, and part of it was expense as well. And, I mean, we may benefit from the lower expense of this particular design, which doesn't give us any new spectrum. Minimal, you know, at best will give us some minimal, you know, we may get another channel of audio that we can broadcast if we're successful in convincing the radio manufacturers, like Chris was saying, to have it a software-driven thing so that we can actually determine what we're going to provide. It's been a very long and complicated process. The forces aligned in support of IBOC are kind of overwhelming, and it's the biggest commercial broadcast organizations. It's the transmitter manufacturers. It's the radio receivers. It's Ford Motor. It's quite an array. On the other hand, they can't force consumers to go out and buy these radios. I mean, they may put them in your car and you won't have a choice about it, but it's not at all clear to me that even if this is successfully launched on the broadcast side, that it will be accepted and adopted. And I think that there's a you know, at least some chance that it will be rejected by the consumers. What the CPB panel has recommended in terms of the funding for radio. I mean, it's very weird to be in this position, because I just got back from a meeting where we were fighting to make sure that radio got some part of this digital money pot, so that, assuming that we are going to be pushed by the marketplace at least to convert to digital broadcasting, that radio will have resources to do it. What the panel is recommending at this point is that the funding go to do additional research on AM, because the commercial broadcasters didn't test either directional AM situations or diplexed AM situations, because that's not the kinds of stations that they're mainly dealing with. So we want to test on that. There's money to be used to put together business models to help convince the radio manufacturers to make it possible for us to do two audio streams, so that we have that choice. And then the third part of it is to help the stations that are in these seed markets, which they've actually identified 13 stations overall, I mean 13 markets overall, to help stations in those markets convert to see if, in fact, this technology is going to work. What's happened on the television side is there they have a mandate. Because they have new spectrum, Congress is waiting to get its hands on that spectrum so they can auction it off, so they can make money to balance the budget. And so television is being mandated to change, or they're going to lose their licenses. And the technology does not work. And nobody is building the sets. That's why the FCC has just mandated that you have to put the tuner in, because most of the digital televisions that were being sold did not have a tuner in them.
A brief point on that. Actually, what never gets mentioned for some reason in every story is that Halpage, a company named Halpage, makes a $400
HDTV tuner card you can plug into any old PCI port right now. $400, and it works, but it never gets discussed. And I think the reason is they don't care if you watch it. Because right now Clear Channel in Cincinnati is running high-speed broadband down their excess DTV channels, the auxiliary channels. So we can see that already in DTV, they are already saying, yeah, we don't care if you watch or not. You know, there's this $400 card that can convert your computer into an HDTV receiver, but we're not going to tell you about it because we don't care if you watch. That's what I read when I see them not talking about this. So, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that actually there's a lot of hype out there that's just total, you know. You don't have to buy a $4,000 receiver to see HDTV. But if you, like when we had the Olympics in Richmond, I called up my Channel 12. Okay, I want to watch the Olympics in HDTV. I have this Howpage video card I can buy. Now what? I live in a rental apartment. I got rabbit ears. Can I pick you up? No. I have to bug my landlord to let me mount a 30-foot pole on the side of the building and put a directional Yagi with a rotor on it? What are the chances? So I said to the guy at Channel 12, I said, so what are you going to tell the advertisers when half your viewership can't pick up your DTV signal? He said, I don't know.
I think all of the efforts for early conversion are going to happen in these seed markets, which has some advantages because if it's as bad as Chris thinks it may be, then, you know, I can't imagine that the broadcasters are going to want, you know, they're in Rochester, they're not going to convert to it if it's going to cause those kinds of problems. So we actually have a chance on a limited test. Now, it might impact you there, you know, since New York City is one of the test markets, that the people in those test markets are going to be the ones that are putting their necks out and experimenting with an untried technology that we aren't really going to know how it works until it's up and working. They can't simulate enough of the kinds of problems that may arise. So from the point of view of community radio, I don't think you should plan to convert right away. If you're in one of the seed markets and you can get money and we may be able to use that in some ways to leverage the technology so that it will be more flexible for us to use for increasing our public service as opposed to just selling, you know, data services in conjunction with what we're doing, then it may make sense for those stations to convert and be part of this experiment. But I wouldn't be in any big hurry if... Now, there will be money at PTFP for conversion as well. So the stations that are not able to get the CPB money will be able to go after money at PTFP.
There was something you said earlier that I could reflect on immediately. I just came back from Russia and Germany to visit family and see Russia. And first of all, their radio is incredible. They got five times the playlist of any. Their commercial stations sound like our community radio stations. It's amazing. So part of the thing is the context within which radio thrives. They thrive within a context of four cultures simultaneously walking through their cities. So you hear French, German, Russian, and English in the space of half an hour. So, you know, I think that partly pressure might make radio better, but maybe not. The other thing is that, okay, how does this fit into the topic of today, digital? All right, Germany's had DAB on a fourth separate band for 3 years now. And so I know this, so I go over there, and every time I see an electronics store open, I kind of stick my head in the window or I ask the guy, do you have a DAB receiver so I can hear what it sounds like for myself? could not find one in a week and a half of tramping all over Germany. I went to Hanover, Clausthal, Goslar, Frankfurt, Munich, Schwenningen. I went to a bunch of cities, could not find a single shop that was selling a DAB receiver 3 years after it had been introduced. I talked every time I got in a car, a taxi, a friend, anybody, a friend of a friend who had a car, I'd ask them, do you have a DAB receiver? No. Have you heard of DAB? No. Eureka? No. You know, I found three people, and I was there for a week and a half, who'd even heard of it, and they've had it 3 years, and none of them were enthusiastic. One of them was a guy who's a nut for cars. He loves cars. He loves radio. He's got all the latest stuff. He'd heard of it, and he said, it's all the same programming. It sounds slightly better, but you know what? My exhaust is so loud that I can't tell the difference. And we said this in the FCC record like 3 years ago, that nobody's going to care for a tiny increment quality when they've got their kids screaming and the road noise and the engines and the tires. Who cares? You know, if it's at my office. Yeah, well, there's that too. Can you listen? Imagine Mozart on your cell phone cutting in and out. Same idea. But, you know, it's the other thing was the only person who was even slightly enthusiastic was a salesman. And even he said, oh, yeah, you know, it's going to be great, blah, 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 but it's not here yet very well. Hanover only has five, and so it's not enough for us to even sell them in the stores. So they've had it for 3 years on a separate band, no interference problem, robust, proven technology, Eureka. It's got all the RDS plus stuff. You know, they can show images like weather maps or traffic, whatever is on their little screen. All that potential's there, and as far as I can tell, not even the people who sell the stuff care, much less the consumers. So if it were just a case of, yeah, let them do whatever, and if, you know, like AM stereo, yeah, let them do it. You know, it won't hurt anybody else, so go ahead and try. I wouldn't be talking about this. I'd be working on building low-power FM. I'd be talking to you guys about sharing programming. I would not be beating what I hope is a dead horse. The only reason I'm beating this horse is because it can destroy my ability to hear my favorite Norfolk radio station, WHRV, in Richmond, which I can now hear because they're first adjacent to this guy, just barely. But when they kick in IBOC, forget it. Never hear them again.
It seems like that there's a number of things that, you know, are issued as the immediate short-term kind of problem of this rule possibly being made sometime in September. And we don't know when, though. There's no date.
Okay.
But, I mean, it seems like that the main demand should be no hybrid model for IBOC.
No digital on analog bands. Do it on another band.
Right. Yeah. That's the same thing as what I said, is that you don't have some hybrid model of digital and analog together.
Right.
Okay. And that there be, on this new band, there be a guaranteed spectrum for nonprofits.
Yes.
And that there be and that it allow for multiple audio streams.
Yes.
Commercial broadcasters don't just get, well, I guess if we don't have that multiple band, those should be the central demands. And then if there's fallback positions, like no, you know, the protected core thing, no use of, But regardless of how this, I think we should keep the demands fairly simple, and I think that the Grassroots Radio Conference should take a position, and that if there's energy to do some work around this, that this be sent to all of the low-power FM stations that are trying to get licenses right now, you know, and ask them to sign on to it, and that we focus in on Powell, or what?
Yes, that's right.
Powell.
Yes.
Yeah, and that and then the individual Congress people. But, you know, having a central PowerPoint to complain against is very powerful.
Because if investigating Paola and whatnot, you could send a letter to Powell and tell him, hey, I'm CCing this to the people who are investigating Paola channel is a major player in XM and Ubiquiti.
And so, one factual question, isn't Ubiquiti connected to Lucent, or isn't Lucent?
Yes. Well, it is the result of the merger of USADR and Lucent. Ubiquiti is the result of the merger of two companies.
Right, and Lucent is about to fold, isn't it? Oh, okay.
I mean, I totally support all of those goals, but I think we already lost that fight. I mean, Chris, you may not feel that way, but I mean, that was pushed and pushed, and the commercial broadcasters are really desperate to get something out there to compete with satellite radio, to provide more data services, to And I think that the alignment, I mean, this is a strategic position. You know, NPR pushed for a long time for, you know, separate spectrum and fear for Eureka system.
But they never went to the public. I've never heard an NPR station going to their public and saying, please call your FCC guy, your congressman. They always did it behind the scenes. Are they allowed to do that?
Well, you have to be careful with your nonprofit status about actually lobbying in a particular position, although you can do education.
It's possible, yes. It's a mission. The definition of what you can lobby for is if it's in defense of mission is the key phrase, and I think this would qualify. But,
anyway, I mean, do you really think that that there's a chance of opening that up? Okay.
Now, except for a very recent two recent developments, I would agree with her that we just got to try to do some measuring and try to get it to be retroactively removed and just hope that the mistake can be learned from. Except, I still think we can head them off at the pass because the FCC and the military have finally agreed to release portions of the L-band, which they wouldn't do in 1992. Really brief history. The NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, used to be gung-ho for the world standard of Eureka 147 DAB on the L-band of 1452 to 1492 megahertz. The NAB used to be a big supporter of it, but the military said, we got to keep that spectrum for telemetry with our test missiles and, you know, flying stuff. And so everybody else on the planet can have it, but except for Japan and the U.S. And Japan didn't decide, they just decided on their own, but the only two groups in the world who haven't already decided on Eureka is Japan and the U.S. And in our case, it was because the military wouldn't release it. Well, that's no longer true. The military, as of about, is it 6 months ago? 5 or 6 months ago. Yeah, because what can you do with a missile, right? You launch it from New Mexico. It gets to 37,000 feet above altitude. Guess what? Elvis from Alberta is wiping out your ability to communicate with the missile. I don't really want Elvis monkeying with a missile, and neither does the military, which is why they have agreed, okay, Canada did this. It was the world standard. We're going to let it go. And that, I think, is our kind of camel's nose under the tent. We're like, hey, okay, we couldn't do it in 92, but now we can. We have software-defined radio. We could go ahead and license people to go ahead and get started on 1452 through 1492 using software-defined. Let's say we pick a bad codec. So what? You redefine its software. Let's say you don't like your particular piece of spectrum. You can shorten or fatten within the parameters they define because it's software-defined. We did not have practical software-defined radio technology even 3 years ago, and now we do. And so those two things, I think, mean that IBOC is a disaster, even if you're a proponent of IBOC DAB. Doing it now would be a disaster because you'd be locking yourself into an outdated codec with a hardware definition. You could instead say, let's make a software. This year we're going to go to 1492 megahertz. Maybe 10 years from now they want to auction that off. No problem. I'll slide on down to 222 megahertz. I'll flash the BIOS of all my listeners' receivers. They'll all slide down to 222 megahertz. No problem. That's possible with software-defined radio and transmitters. It's not possible with hardware-defined transmitters and receivers. And the military is releasing the L-band. So I don't think it's impossible. More than 6 months ago, I would have agreed. I said, oh, where would they go? But now they have somewhere to go, and we have the technology to instantly reconfigure as we go.
You know, the demand's there, the manufacturers get to sell new radios. three or four bands.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They still get to make money.
I mean,
it costs us more money to convert as well.
Actually, that's what I wanted to ask about was the antennas and transmitters, because in the Denver area there's been a recent, there are people trying to install digital antennas or get the sites for it. And
for DTV?
I think these were actually for TV, so right. I'm curious how it relates though, to radio, because they were going to be much higher than usual. They were going to be right along the front range, so it was going to have a high impact on the visual. And neighborhood associations were able to shut this down. So the Denver area at the moment has no clue where to put digital broadcasting antennas, because for radio and television at the moment, you just go right up above Denver in the front range, put the antennas, and they're not that unsightly. But with the digital TV antennas, they would be huge. And so.
That's another issue for FM stations, is that Channel 6 television stations have long been protected from FM, from non-commercial FM stations, from interference. When you try to get a new non-commercial FM station on the air, you have to demonstrate that you're not interfering with the local Channel 6 station. Well, now the opposite is going to happen as Channel 6 stations put up digital antennas, and I think it's happening very soon in Hartford, Connecticut, and Alaska. Are going to be the first two where digital channel 6 television stations could possibly cause interference to a whole range of frequencies, 88, 89, 90.
You know, given this question of interference becoming a problem, and that it's a model project so that they have to implement it in these key markets, if there is complaints, then it seems like that we'll be able to mobilize listeners to do something, and that is one of the reasons why we should demand what's correct, why we should demand the military ban, and that we might just get it. I think that this does seem like that he's done his research.
I think that's a really good point. I just wanted to follow up on that remember where we're at. It's very unusual for me to be the voice of optimism. I don't think it's ever happened to me in my entire life. But remember where we're at. This fall, the FCC is most likely going to approve IBOC. At that point, they're going to start discussing standards for interference. When they do start discussing standards for interference, there will be more public comment periods with which you as stations and your listeners can comment and state very loudly that you do not want to suffer any interference from digital transmission on the FM band. And then once these test markets go on, if any of your listeners lose service, they should really kick and scream and send letters to the FCC, because the FCC has a really long-standing tradition of protecting service. Even if you're listening to a station far outside of its predicted range, the FCC does not like it when listeners lose service to existing radio stations. So when that starts happening, you've got to act on it. You've got to get your listeners who have suffered interference to complain to the FCC, because the FCC will most likely listen to that.
It's important that the public get some educational input on what this interference is coming from. The likelihood is their signal will be diminished. They won't know why. They're not going to be technically savvy. They have to have it explained to them in layman's terms that if this station goes on the air on this date and you start hearing interference on this date, report it to this 800 number and get that database connected to the people so they know what's causing the interference, so they know to report it at all.
Is that a lot of I just know from having worked in commercial broadcasting and a little bit of NPR down in Florida that, so the transformer will start freaking out and you'll get a very similar sound, or a bad fluorescent tube. And if it's a radio with a weak front end, it'll pick up the fluorescent light. And they'll think, it's just something wrong. They won't even think to call the FCC. So, I do. I just didn't want to play it unless you do. Do y'all want to hear it?
I wanted to add one other thing as a channel.
Channel 6 issue, which is one of the things that we've been pushing for and NPR has been pushing for, is that in the digital television conversion, that the Channel 6 be required to move to their digital frequencies and give up 82 to 88 for non-commercial radio. And, you know, it's a long way off, and it's a long shot for pushing for, but I think it's a really important issue for getting more spectrum for non-commercial broadcasting. And this is an opportunity that will be here right now and then won't be. And it's just a matter of they're not allowed, the Channel 6 stations are not allowed to stay on their analog frequencies, that they have to move to their digital. Well, I'd be much happier doing that than.
It's 60 seconds. Do you want to?
Yes, yeah. Your spot.
All right.
If you don't want to hear that sound on your radio dial, call your member of Congress and ask them to oppose a forced conversion to digital audio broadcasting. Even worse, the big broadcasters are demanding, after a few years, that regular broadcasts will be prohibited. And this is all your radio will hear. Yes, in the land of the free, you will be required to replace every single one of the half a billion radios we now own. Imagine the landfills overflowing with radios. Imagine the tiny college radio station that can't afford the $30,000 for the new type of transmitter they want you to use. They are going to go off the air. For more information, visit digitaldisaster.org or call 804-649-WRFR. Again, that is digitaldisaster.org, 804-649-WRFR.
I have three different versions that cover slightly different approaches and aspects, but they all have that sample sound. You know, this one talks about the landfills, and another one talks more about the NFL.
If you don't want to hear that sound on your radio dial, call your member of Congress and ask them to oppose a forced conversion to digital audio broadcasting. Digital audio broadcasting is an audio version of a fax machine, but your current radio will only hear. Even worse, the big broadcasters are demanding that they get to double the width of their signal on the radio dial. So if your favorite smaller independent broadcaster happens to be next to a strong signal, they will literally jam your favorite station. Call your member of Congress to oppose forced conversion to digital audio broadcasting. For more information and a link, visit digitaldisaster.org or call 804-649-WRFR. Again, that's digitaldisaster.org or 804-649-WRFR.
So the reason we say forced conversion is that if you read through the comments, the people who want it almost all unanimously demand a forced conversion. No option to stay with analog. Now, lately they've been kind of backpedaling a little bit from that forcing. But throughout most of the comments, they say we've got to have this. Sony even said in their comments to the FCC that if they didn't force it, then nobody would buy it. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. They didn't put it quite that way, but you know, they put it in their you know, they used an entire paragraph to say that. But essentially, they're saying that DAB sales in Europe are flat, nobody's interested, and the only way to get this product out there is to leave the consumer no choice. And I just thought, I was absolutely flabbergasted. I almost fell out of my chair when I read that. I was just like, oh my God, and this is in the official record.
And I think that's a good point to get on, too. I mean, how much use this digital receiver going to cost? Because at the moment, just think how accessible radio is. You go out for $20, you buy a radio.
Less than that. They got radios that come in a pen. You got radios that come in a pen. It's like the most free communication medium.
And that's something that really bothers me.
And don't forget, during national emergencies, there are you know, what do you call refugees, and one of the first things they grab is, you know, I remember, for example, the Afghans consider the BBC the sixth prayer
because that was the only place they could get reliable information. It's the only place that girls heard women in a position of authority or a position of speaking at all. to anybody who might hear other than, you know, their other female relatives. And so plain old shortwave amplitude modulated radio was in essence what kept the Afghani minds alive during those years in many ways. And, you know, if you have a huge hurricane or some disaster, like 9/11 wiped out all the TV, if it had been a third plane, it wiped out all the FM. It would not have wiped out all the AM. So plain old regular analog radio is just so robust. It's, you know, it sounds perfectly good when you're driving in a car or you're in an office environment that's got other noise. One thing I must mention, by the way, briefly, is that the testing they did on the alleged increase in sound quality for IBOC is easily seen to be within the margin of error of the measuring instrument, which is to say, they haven't actually proved that it's an increase in sound quality.
I hope everybody caught that little piece in our PSA about the landfills, because we already have a major problem with computer and electronics that contains lead-bearing solders. Lead does physical damage to neurons, makes people dumber when they get it in their body. So we're purposely talking about dumbing down the future generation to sell a few more needless radios. Now, the lead in the electronics industry is scheduled to be removed. They're working on the technology, and in the next 4 or 5 years, they may be able to start making electronic components without lead-based solder. But for now, they're still using it. So now we're going to put 250 million pounds of lead from the old radios we're forcing them to throw away. At the same time, we're going to be putting an equivalent amount of lead in the new equipment, whereas if we waited longer to let the technologies mature, we wouldn't be putting, you know, necessarily the old radios in the grave for some time to come and not creating the new future lead problem.
Sorry. Thanks. First of all, you'll be happy to hear that our local pirate radio station has been playing your PSAs for some time now. Exactly those. I guess you mentioned earlier a DTV channel in Cincinnati that's been using the sideband whatever the technical jargon is, but basically they're using the signal to deliver internet access to people's homes. And I've got a friend, the same one who runs the pirate radio station, who swears up and down that really what this is about is converting the FM spectrum into mostly high-speed internet access, wireless internet access, and, yeah, cell phones, pagers. I wonder if you could maybe elaborate on that a little more, talk about the corporations in particular that would be lining up. Like, is Clear Channel in a position then to become an internet service provider over the FM?
Sure. As a matter of fact, There's a company named Q Corporation that for years has sold wireless voicemail and email through the FM subcarriers. So they've already got an entire infrastructure of delivery throughout the United States. Well, but they had the technology anyway. Yeah, right. These companies, you got to keep a score sheet. But the fact is that the technology existed. The distribution network existed. It probably still does. It's just changed the name. The backbone across the United States, last time I visited their website, they claimed that they could reach, that if you bought your delivery service for email or voicemail paging through their subcarrier-based system of delivery, that they could reach 97% of all the landmass of the United States in 500 markets. It's almost impossible to duplicate that with regular pages because you have every civic association opposing the tower. But with an FM station running subcarrier or IBOC, you already got the tower. So that's one thing that doesn't get mentioned very often is the huge draw of wireless nirvana of already having all the towers in place.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I don't know if anybody's not following the idea of what's possible in terms of what Chris is calling software-based digital broadcasting. It's a completely different idea than what exists on AM and FM. Currently on AM and FM, the federal government issues a broadcast license to broadcast at a particular frequency, 88.7, and then if anybody else broadcasts at 80.7 next door to you, they're going to interfere with you. That is not the way it has to be with digital broadcasting. It's possible to have a model that's much more like the internet is now for webcasting, where you can start up a webcast, and you can start up a webcast, and everybody in this entire room can start up a webcast without interfering with one another, because each webcast is identified in a particular way that people's computers can go and find the one that they want. It's now technically feasible to do the exact same thing with a broadcast medium. And there has been talk at the FCC about doing that with the FM band or finding another band to do that. Now, that does sound like just a fantastic democratic model where any individual or group can start up a radio station. But, of course, that's incredibly threatening to the companies that hold the monopoly on the radio licenses these days. So what they are moving towards instead is what Chris has referred to as a hardware-based model, where the receiver that you have doesn't allow just anybody to start up a frequency. So I hope that that explains more the idea behind the software-based and the hardware. Yeah, if they did that on a separate band, that would be fantastic, and then they didn't have it be a hardware-based model. They made it based on the way webcasting is on the Internet now. That would just be the most amazing thing on Earth.
We've got to wrap up here in a bit here. I think we can get to the last things, and I have a couple announcements I need to make to everybody after that. But I wanted to, maybe as a wrap-up, my other question is, it kept getting hit on, like, what can we do? Who can we contact?
The idea of who we can contact and what we can contact them about is in the way of Congress people, and there seems to be a bit of debate. Like, what is actually going to be up for discussion in September, whatever? Ken, you were saying something about that's when interference standards. But what's this idea, or what was this discussion that was going on about how to ideally just sell off all the existing bands? Is there still time to contact people and have feedback about that? What is that?
The Spectrum Policy Task Force is a committee of the FCC that's really trying to look at the larger issues of who gets portions to the spectrum and who doesn't and how it should be allocated in the future. The Spectrum Task Force is going to come out with something. We're not sure what, but they're going to come out with something this fall, and there will be ample opportunity to comment on that. And then, you know, whatever they come out with this fall, they're not going to be implementing anything, but you're going to get a much clearer idea of where they're coming from.
Dealing with DAB, are they going to put out a proposal to carve things up with DAB?
It may not pertain to IBOC, but what they're looking at for the first time that I'm aware of is they're just looking at all spectrum, AM, FM, police bands, every kind of band that you can imagine, and really looking at how to reallocate it. You know, how to essentially, you know, squeeze more signals into it. And so far, their thinking has clearly been based on market models. They just want to auction it off to the highest bidder. They haven't talked about preserving anything for not-for-profit or educational use or anything like that. But the Spectrum Task Force will come out with a decision this fall. There will be comment periods. There will be ample opportunity for listeners for stations and listeners to get involved with that. And do you do digitaldisaster.org? So I assume that digitaldisaster.org is a really good place to check for information on IBOC and hopefully the Spectrum Policy Task Force also. You should urge your general managers and your chief engineers to really pay attention to IBOC and find out what stations nearby are testing. Could it possibly affect our listeners? That's really important because, as somebody pointed out, they may get interference and not even know what it's due to. Some stations are very strong technically, some community stations are very weak technically. So I think within your station, you really need to make sure that the people in charge of transmission are really on top of this and are perfectly aware of what's happening with Channel 6 digital television stations and what's happening with test IBOC stations.
I would really like to see come out of this conference some resolutions, because I know some of you guys are working on this. And just to have, we've got this amazing group of people here from a variety of stations, and it will carry a certain amount of weight that if the Grassroots Radio Conference says, you know, no hybrid model, you know, digital off the analog band, we want Channel 6, you know, things like that. And that,
actually, I shoot for the
or ask for both. I mean, it's pitiful. We've got a quarter of the FM spectrum. We have none of the AM spectrum. We should have the military band. We should have Channel 6. We should have multiple, frequencies on the L band for nonprofit. Half of it should be nonprofit, you know, and all of Channel 6. And you know, some of the other demands. And I was just thinking, you know, like maybe a few people that are interested could get together and draft something, and then at one of the plenaries we could have a vote on it. you know, or a sign-on time, you know, where we give a presentation and people sign on as individuals if their stations can't, you know, they don't have authority for their station.
I think one of the other arguments is that I think there's a very good chance that because of the kinds of things Chris experienced in Europe and what is happening here, that people are not going to have enough of an improvement. People are not going to go out and buy digital radios because they're going to get a little teeny bit of better sound improvement. What would drive them to it is new content. That's what drove people to FM initially. And if we can't provide new content for people, they're not going to buy a radio.
Remember, if consumers don't buy digital radio tuners, there's not going to be as many companies that are going to be willing to make the investment to install a digital transmitter. So, you know, this could go the way of Quadrophenia.
But the problem is you're probably right, I hope, maybe. I want to scratch the word probably, because they are pushing so hard for this that they claim it's going to save them from satellite. And I'm saying that because it makes me lose the ability to hear WHRV Norfolk, which I can now hear, I have one less reason to listen to the AM or FM band. Excellent. I have one more reason to listen to satellite, internet, or cassettes or CDs. And I keep telling the FCC and every chance I get, IBOC not only will not save broadcasting, it will accelerate abandonment of the AM and FM band. Will that mean the destruction? I hope not, but it might. And the problem is in the time it takes for us to realize that, how many small broadcasters who are riding the crest of bankruptcy are going to fall off in the meantime?
XM, I just wanted to add that, you know, XM and Sirius have gotten mentioned. They're the two large companies doing satellite broadcasting, and that is a big part of what has the commercial broadcasters so concerned about unveiling this new gimmick called DAB. It's quite possible that Sirius and XM could go bankrupt before this thing really gets going, because they're burning cash hand over fist. So Sirius and XM could go down the tubes, and then the commercial broadcasters could be relieved that their monopoly is once again unfettered.
I don't want to bore you with too many technical details, but it's important to keep one thing in mind. When you say that XM is a satellite-based broadcasting system, in fact, technical problems arose with getting enough solar panels on the satellites to get enough power to do the direct broadcasting to a small size antenna. So what they've done is they've begged the FCC, and the FCC has liberally granted permission to do terrestrial-based repeaters. So this is not a satellite service. It is already a terrestrial-based service that has used exclusion of other newcomers. Think back in the early days of radio when, like, KYW and all the real short call letters were issued. That was like the land grants in the 1830s. You know, it was first come, first serve, here you are. Thank you very much for getting on the air. Now, the competitive model with all this crowded, you know, limited, stingy little spectrum for over-the-air broadcasting the FCC's ever created has meant that the competitive model cannot work in radio until we get some more bandwidth. We've got to demand more bands, and a certain percentage of that should be for non-commercial purposes, guaranteed at the time that, you know, this is a political move that has to be made.
So I have a question for Carol, and I don't want to put you on the spot or anything. No, just give it to Carol, because this is going to be a quick question. But what would NFCB be willing to do in this? Because I know NFCB played a big role when they were trying to zero out funding in terms of mobilizing members of NFCB, and of course NPR played a very big role in all of that too, in terms of turning it around, but it was using the radio to put out the call to listeners. So, you know, where...
Well, I mean, the role that we've been playing is participating in these panels that have been doing it. We filed comments with the FCC, and we will definitely, you know, continue to do that. I mean, I've been operating from the assumption that we already lost the thing. This is new information to me, so I have to, you know, digest that and figure out. I definitely want to keep involved in the struggle to make sure that we do have the option of having a second audio band capability. And I also want to keep in the fight to make sure that radio gets some piece of the pie of money at CPB. And, I mean, I'll continue talking. Chris and I have talked a lot over the years about, we talked to him when we were putting our comments together. And, you know, the question, I mean, one of the big issues is we have a limited number of choices, I think, about issues that we're going to go to our listeners to activate them. And we have to be smart about how we're going to use that. And, you know, I wouldn't want to throw one of those away on this if there's, like, no chance that we're going to win at all. You know, I don't want to miss an opportunity if there is a chance, but, you know, we've over lunch, we're talking about the same issues around copyright and webcasting and whether, you know, we want to go to our listeners and urge them to go to Congress. And we have to be strategic, I think, about when we're going to do that.
Opportunity, or also if there's no chance that this is going to even come down, then it's like, right, this is a crisis, and then it's not. So it's all
right.
It's really important to report interference. To get
that's critical. Yes, if you're in the areas where stations are converting, because I don't think stations are going to convert outside of those seed markets initially, because there's going to be huge, campaigns. Yeah, they're major markets. They're New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. Philadelphia's not one of them. Minneapolis isn't one of them. I'll put it out on the Boston is one of them. So I think people in those stations in those areas should be prepared to do, education campaigns on the air and probably in program guides and possibly mailings to their stations.
Can we go to Daryl, and then we're going to have to wrap up?
I just have one little question, and I don't know how you're going to answer this, but it has struck me. In the case of the digital TV, there is something that will fall back. Basically, cable TV or satellite TV or whatever you want to have, there will be a way for people to use their analog TV sets, albeit by putting a converter box on it or whatever. But when it comes to this digital radio, once it changes, you're done. There is nothing. No one's ever going to come out with a converter box to change your little Walkman radio into a digital radio. So you're going to lose every single one of those analog radios that are on, that are there now. And it just seems to me that ought to be brought out to the public to say, You know that car radio you have that works real good and everything? Well, say goodbye. It's gone.
$900 radio, yeah. So you want to wrap up, right? So I'd say the most important thing, I think, at this point is because Congress, and actually this is partly an answer to you, why did I not say the FCC? Why did I say Congress? Because Congress is grabbing the neck of Clear Channel right now and demanding some answers. It's possible that they're their next Enron. And if part of that Enronitis is backing plans to destroy smaller broadcasters by pressuring our taxpayer-funded government agency, the FCC, into forcing, they would like to force, a conversion to expensive technology that interferes, then to me, I mean, it ought to be in the Paola discussions, it ought to be in all these discussions that are happening in Congress right now, and I think, also, we should be calling her, because, of course, the FCC people are not used to getting phone calls by the bucket load from regular people. That's for sure. You're right. So I think we should do both. We should call our Congress critters and say, this should be in this investigation. And we should call our FCC commissioners and say, I was never invited to listen to an IBOC test station and had a list of when it was on and off so that I could listen to see how it affected my ability to hear stations around it. I never heard two of them next to each other. I never got a chance to try out an IBOC receiver to see what I thought. Nobody ever told me about it directly.
No, I don't have any closing comments beyond what I've said several times, which is that it's really important to report interference. And I urge you again to contact your station's chief engineers and general managers so that they can get up on this issue, because it's incredible how little information there's been out there about this. FM and AM have remained relatively stable and static for decades, and there's this huge tidal wave happening that's going to possibly wash the whole thing away, and it's right around the corner. And we should try to take advantage of the fact that the FCC does not like service taken away from existing listeners. But you've got to get your station's management to be aware if and when you're losing listeners and getting interference from some of the digital test stations.
And I'd just like to agree with that and add one further thing. You get interference, you call the 800 number, you report it, then what? unless you have troops with spectrum analyzers, with videotape recorder and camera looking at that waveform, so you can get documented proof of the interference, then what? You know? What do you do with the reports? We have to mobilize station engineers who are interested in this to create a videotape recording of a spectrum analysis with a time and date code and a station logs, you know, right on that evidence, so that we have the evidence in the can to take to the FCC.